Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two awesome panelists. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, Kelly.
I'm glad to have you with me. Also today, I have the inimitable Brian Chaffin.
Wait, me? I heard you had two awesome. I was waiting to find out who the other person was, the third person.
Is you, hon?
Oh, well, that's awesome. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad. I am glad to have you with me. And Brian, I'm particularly glad to have you with me because we want to talk about something that I know. I know we've brushed up against sort of on this show occasionally, and that is when we get a little legislation in our technology, or specifically lawmakers in our we get a little lawmaker in our technology. And
or politician in our technology.
And sometimes these are not two great tastes that taste great together.
Sometimes not.
So tell us about the latest.
Well, I haven't delved specifically into her plan, but Elizabeth Warren is getting a lot of press for essentially wanting to break up big tech. I think as of last night, as the Democratic debate, she pledged that she would not take any money from big tech. And what it made me think about is the fact that what does she mean by big tech? What does that actually mean? And if it means all of big tech, it's kind of easy to counter. Mm-hmm. If you're running against that from the standpoint of, hey, I like my iPhone, do you? Or hey, I like my Android device, do you? Because we don't get things like iPhones without big tech,
right?
And we don't get. People like Facebook. We don't get Facebook without the big tech company that becomes Facebook.
Right.
So it's,
and don't forget, people voted with their pocketbooks on Facebook, right? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You opened it and let Facebook take a look around? Because that's kind of what's happening.
I think he's saying that people did not quit Facebook, right?
You know, that's true.
The controversies that Facebook has inflicted upon itself and all the mistakes that they've made. And that's just the mistakes that we know about.
Right. Just the things that have been reported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just recorded, and just the data breaches that we know about, just the horrific decisions that terribly run company has made that we know about. You just think about all the things we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all that, you know, Facebook's numbers continue to grow.
Yeah, there's still like a squillion people on the platform.
Danny Kahneman analysis, the Israeli PhD Nobel Prize winner in psychology, who pointed out, I don't know if he was first, but he made a big fuss about the idea that if people want something bad enough, they will rationalize away the negatives.
Yeah, that's all of us. Yeah. All of us.
That means you are a person. Yeah, that's how that works. there's no secret to that. And part of the, I think, you know, one thing that contributes to that is inertia. You know, everybody's on Facebook because everybody's on Facebook. And even if you complain about it, you're still there. So I think, but to Brian's point, like what we have heard from Elizabeth Warren, are the words big tech. She tends to say big tech, have something to, has opinions about big tech, how we need to break up big tech, that sort of thing. Last night, what she said during the debate was that she was going to turn away contributions over $200 from executives at big tech companies, banks, private equity firms, and hedge funds. So she had already said before that she was not going to take large contributions from executives at pharmaceutical and fossil fuel companies. And so she's just sort of adding to the list of places that she's not going to accept more than $200 from a person who's higher up at those places.
The thing is that when you're talking in the abstract, when you're talking about dealing, because there are issues with big tech,
mm-hmm.
or at least some big tech. There were issues with Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft routinely leveraged its monopoly power in one market to enter into new markets.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft routinely used fear, uncertainty, and doubt to quash the competition, to starve would-be competition of investment funds mm-hmm. and opportunities. And Microsoft routine, I always think about the fight between Microsoft and what was Dale Yoakam's company? Dale Yoakam, the former Dale Yoakam. Let's do some software development company. Let's do some.
Well, while Brian's doing the research, I'll get a word in edgewise here. I think one of the problems in Washington is that companies, by virtue of their success and by mass market public relations and the quality of their hardware, have become so successful that they are sort of impervious to regulation, and they've stepped in some cases over the line in terms of selling people's information and invading people's privacy. And I think Elizabeth Warren maybe feels that if only these companies were smaller and less powerful, weaker, less influential, they wouldn't play such a dramatic role in our lives in a negative way.
But that's just speculation on your part, right, John?
Well, of course, that's what I do.
You don't know that's what's motivating her comments.
No, that's what I'm presuming, that the motivation behind the big tech angst is all about.
Right, but here's the thing. Yes, Brian.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, the thing about that is that while in some cases talking about how these companies are so large and they have such a control over people's lives, they're such a huge part of people's lives, you know, and that power isn't always used for good. Like, that's a valid argument against some companies, but I'm not 100% convinced that you can paint everyone with the same brush. So,
okay. Well, that was, Borland was the company I was going to talk about, by the way.
Which one?
Borland.
Oh, Borland. Okay.
Yeah. This is back when Microsoft, like, paid an executive like $1 million to leave Borland, and he could they were paying these huge signing bonuses to Borland executives to steal them away, and one of the biggest towards the end of that process was they gave him, I believe it was $1 million, and he could start work like in a year.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he left Borland. So there are plenty of examples of big tech stuff all along, but don't forget that there are also people who think that Apple should be broken up, or that the App Store shouldn't be a thing, or that like we should be able to install apps from other places on mm-hmm. our iPhones. And they think that Apple is part of the big tech problem. So I think that one of the things that we do is when we hear the concept of big tech, we project meaning onto that term to only include the companies that we have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When I start thinking of big tech, I'm thinking generally speaking of Google, Amazon, and Facebook.
Right.
That's what's going through my head. But Apple is a big tech company.
Well, and for me, partly it's context. Like, they need to be broken up because of their influence over people's lives. When I think of that, like, there are a lot of people with Android devices, right? So it's not like Apple has a monopoly on smartphones. Apple certainly doesn't have a monopoly on computers. And I think about, when it comes to the hardware, like, I don't know if you could reasonably make an argument that anybody has a monopoly on the hardware side of computers. It depends on what it is we're talking about. And so, I think maybe if she were having more, if she were having conversations or, making statements or delivering speeches where she was saying that it was time to regulate social media companies, and that social media platforms might need a little bit of legislative guidance. That seems more like it gets to the heart of what it is she's trying to say in most cases, when she's not, when she's talking about something specific and not a bigger picture sort of thing.
I don't think any of us, though, have read her actual plan for breaking up big tech.
I have not read it, but I have heard her speak about it more than once in more detail than what she's than what we're discussing here, basically. But so
there's another issue, too. And this is, like, to me, is also one of the issues about striking out at whether or not filthy rich people should exist. Like, I you know, there's going to be a little bit edgy here on the dangerous thin ice front, but
buckle up, John. Here we go.
There's certainly an argument to be made about the wealth gap and the dangers that presents to society. However, there are things that can happen when capital accumulates into someone or some company's hands. There are things that are made possible by large amounts of money.
Yes.
And I would say that this explosion of fantastic, amazing video TV shows mm-hmm. that we've seen over the last several years, this what I consider to be the golden age of TV that we've been experiencing for the last several years, is made possible in part by the fact that Hollywood and increasingly big tech is fabulously wealthy.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of us enjoy those shows. A lot of us enjoy this fantastic content. Now, then the flip side is you've got the issue, or what I consider to be an issue with Amazon, of not only putting out all of the competition, or a lot of the competition, not only threatening the threatening the merchant class, which is a big part of the middle class. And I believe that having a healthy middle class is necessary for any healthy society.
Yes.
But so, yeah, not only things like that, but, you know, like on the book side, where I've talked about the fact that Amazon sucking all the profits out of the publishing industry has resulted in fewer books, fewer authors coming along, and worse, like the books that do get published being lower quality because there's not as much editing time and dollars to go around in the publishing industry.
Right.
That, like, as a reader, that bothers me. It's a problem. And these are all different issues, kind of essentially associated with big tech. And I don't know, what does breaking up Facebook even look like, for instance?
It's a tough question because they're kind of monolithic.
Well,
they do what they do, except for the side business of currency or dabbling in hardware devices.
Or Instagram.
They could spin that stuff back out. It would be the first thing I think of is Instagram and WhatsApp and... There's the third one I'm forgetting about.
But does that spin them back out again? Of making the company less invasive. I mean, if you strip away Instagram and strip away their little communication devices on the desktop and perhaps their currency initiative, and you just get back to what Facebook used to be, how does that slow them down?
Yeah, I think the real issue with Facebook is the ways in which advertising and control over information flow are welded together. And how do you break that up besides just, like, you know, make Facebook go away?
Precisely.
And that is, I mean, that's insanely tough, especially when, like I said, people like their Facebook. And here's one of the problems. There are places in the world where people get all of their information from Facebook. That's a horrible thing. But now take that away from them. Mm-hmm. That is also probably a horrible thing.
Yes.
These things aren't easy, and they're not easily digestible.
Right.
And I there are zero easy solutions, and especially when you start trying to lump in all of the big tech companies together, and over, like, the thick slathered light icing that's you know, layered on top of that is all these fantastic things that we have come to love and appreciate and sometimes depend on all stemming from the fact that big tech has become a thing.
Right.
I mean,
the other thing we have to remember, Brian, is the politicians who are running for president make promises that they by themselves don't have the authority or legislative power to enact.
That's true.
You have to take her a euphemism. She doesn't like the way big tech is powerful, influential.
But she's not the only one.
She's cashing in on people's alarm.
She's not really the only one who talks about big tech. I mean, it may be because of her that big tech is more in the conversation, but she's not the only one who's talking about this. And she's not the only one who's talked about some aspects, if not all aspects, of big tech being broken up or, you know, squished.
Right. I think it goes back to Elizabeth Warren's history as a consumer affairs advocate and her history before she was even a senator, when she was a professor and she was touting the consumer rights and the balance of power between companies and people. I mean, that's sort of like her academic background in history, is creating a balance between consumers and companies.
It's her bread and butter. She's been at it for decades.
That's right. And she's just cashing in on that right now as a way to make people feel good about her being an advocate for them as people, instead of an advocate for big government or big tech.
I think you're probably writing off her motivations substantially too blithely, but that's just me. Different people can definitely agree to have different opinions on this.
I don't think that's her. Mine. I don't think it's her motivation to do it because it makes her look good. I think it's her motivation to do it to make things better. It has never struck me as anything differently than that.
It's always a worthy thing to try to strike that balance.
Right. So that's what we're talking about here. If you have opinions about breaking up big tech companies, whichever ones they are, if you have a vision for how Facebook could be ratcheted down a notch or two, we would like to hear about that from you. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. The other topic I'd like to talk about today, just briefly, is that we saw a little bit more of a little more Apple Entertainment Inc. last night, and a little less Apple Computer Inc. In Los Angeles, where we had a premiere for the Ron Moore show for All Mankind, which they had an event for. And from what I've seen, I haven't seen a ton of coverage of it yet, but from what I've seen, it looked like any other sort of premiere event. Like the stars of it were there. They were all dressed up. There was a red carpet situation. You know, everybody went in, there was a screening. Like they talk, you know, back to Brian's point about peak TV, or the golden age of television. This looked like, you know, when they used to have premieres for Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and I think Lost may have done a couple of them, same sort of thing. And this is a little bit more Apple Media Corp instead of Apple Technology Corp. And it was kind of interesting to see. What do you think, Brian?
I am fascinated that Apple has essentially embraced. So, like, you know, Apple just launched the Apple TV Plus Newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you look at the tab, I didn't point this out in my article, but if you look at the tab in your browser for that site, it says Apple Originals. Mm-hmm. So it's a separate press site for, did you already talk about this on the show?
No.
So it's a separate press site, a separate newsroom, a second newsroom for Apple that deals strictly with its original content, so that the entertainment press doesn't have to go wading through all those yucky, you know, Macs and processors and you know, Retina, whatever that is. And Apple is embracing the entertainment side that it is trying to enter, and they're doing so really, really well. Like you know, Apple has never done social networking well, right?
Right.
They've had a couple of different stabs at it.
Oh, and yeah.
Sorry.
It sort of felt like being stabbed, I think, at one point, to use one of those.
And they weren't very good at it. Whenever Apple has sort of tried to go outside of its core competencies, the company just really hasn't done well. And so far, what I'm seeing with Apple Originals, with Apple, was Apple Worldwide Studios, is that, mm-hmm. or Apple Worldwide Video. I forget what this division is.
Oh yeah, I don't remember.
By Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg. Is that right? Is that right?
I think so.
Is that his name? Everything is going really well, and Apple is very successfully. You know, oh, here's an interesting thing. You remember how everyone was like really pissy about the keynote that focused so much on all the video content?
Yeah.
Right. And when I say everyone, what I really mean is like the tech blogosphere.
Yeah. Everybody that wanted a new MacBook Pro. Didn't get one and got mad.
Oh, this event went too long, and there was just too much Hollywood and all these things. Yeah. And
I'd like to remind everyone, this is the event. The event we're referring to is the event called It's Showtime.
But it was presented as a normal Apple event, right? And I argued at the time that event was aimed not at us, not at the tech world, not at the people listening to this podcast necessarily, right. Not at the people who are making this podcast, not the people who are writing for TMO, not the tech Twitter sphere. It was aimed at Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it was aimed at the entertainment press. And that was, but they didn't separate it enough.
Right.
Now we're seeing some like separate things, and they seem to be doing it really, really well.
So far, yeah. Like that's what I've seen. And I do know people who are far more on the THR end of the spectrum as opposed to the TMO end of the spectrum that we're on. That would be the Hollywood Reporter for people following along at home. And one of the, so in talking to those people casually about this kind of stuff, because it's the thing that comes up, they've seen similar sorts of things, like, you know, Apple's starting to take this stuff seriously, like not just writing the checks and then there are shows and then step three profit, right? Like they're actually going out and, you know, having a premiere event, for example, and getting the cast to show up and having, having the creator of the show and the producers there and all that kind of stuff and making those things happen, you know, just like any other entertainment company who had a new show that they wanted to unveil would do. And one of the things, like for me, the takeaway when I was looking at the coverage from Apple of this event was that the first three episodes of this particular show, For All Mankind, for people who weren't paying much attention to the media stuff, For All Mankind is the show that was done by Ron D. Moore, who came from Star Trek and from Next Generation and created Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, the new gritty dark one with the girl Starbuck.
Yeah, not new anymore.
Yeah. Well, but new compared to the old one. That's what I mean. There's an old Battlestar Galactica and there's a new Battlestar Galactica.
Katie Sackhoff.
Yes. We love her. She's from here. Anyway. So the For All Mankind is the show about the space race and and it's sort of a reimagining, like an alternate history of that happening. And the first three episodes of this will be available when Apple TV Plus launches November 1st. And then after that, it will be out every Friday. And it will be every Friday for a while because we've already heard that they've ordered another season of the show. So this is the first renewal also that we got for TV Plus, and nobody's even seen the first three yet. But rolling them out weekly instead of what we've been getting from other services, which is here's a season at a time, have fun. So I thought that was another interesting thing that I picked up from the coverage of this.
Mixing that up. Some shows are going to be released weekly and some shows are being dumped all at once.
Right.
Yeah, so
but anybody doing it weekly, like, you know, Stranger Things didn't come out weekly. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel didn't come out weekly. What else have I watched? Man in the High Castle didn't come out weekly. You know, some of the original stuff.
Netflix doesn't do that and Amazon doesn't do that.
Right. Some of the original stuff is all at once. So, yeah, that's why I thought this was notable. So, yeah. Anyway, every Friday night, you know, you could watch it come out at 10 o'clock Friday night to nab that sweet X-Files time slot, right? Yeah, I'm totally kidding, because it's a streaming service, guys. It was funny. Anyway.
Can I make one last point about big tech?
Yes, please do.
So in Austin in the 90s, there was a voter initiative for it was put on the ballot for local voters to vote in a busing system.
Okay.
Like a city owned
public transportation,
public transportation system. And okay. It passed with just like overwhelming support. And then no one used it, because when people voted for it, they were voting for other people to use those buses and get the crap out of their way. Right. This is the thing.
We should have good bus systems so that my traffic is better. Yeah.
Yes. And I this has happened in lots of places, but I encountered it in Austin when I was living there. And I think when it comes to big tech, that a lot of people might be thinking to themselves, yeah, break up big tech, you know, not my big tech, break up the other big techs.
Yeah.
And then that was just a thought that popped into my head.
Yeah. As you were saying that, I was trying to come up with what the tech NIMBY thing would be.
We understand Apple. We spent our whole lives living and breathing Apple for the last 20 years, and we know what they're all about and why they do what they do.
And how they do what they do.
And why they've been successful and how they do it. And very few politicians have insight into that process.
That's valid.
Yeah, and I'll throw in the end-user encryption.
Well, and I would say that, you know, a fundamental understanding of technology isn't something a lot of lawmakers have in the first place, like, you know, on a level where if you are a person in charge of legislating that, it, you know, you may need to have a number of people on your staff who can help explain it and turn it into something that is understandable, that you can get behind and really talk about, you know, because you get it better. So anyway, that said, Brian, I think when we talked before about For All Mankind coming out, you were excited about it, right? I'm super excited because I love Ron Moore.
I did not know the premise behind the show. I don't know that I specifically caught the name when it was first announced. So I'm actually a little behind the curveball, eight ball. I'm behind the times on this particular show. I'm super excited about it now.
Okay. I'm super excited. I watched, they dropped a trailer for like the Apollo 11 anniversary, I think. I could be getting that wrong, but there was an anniversary of a space launch, and they dropped a trailer on that day specifically because it was the anniversary of a space launch. And, I've been looking at it, and, I'm very excited. Like I said, I'm a Ron Moore fan. I'm not upset with him about the end of the new Battlestar Galactica. Wasn't my favorite, but I'm not angry about it like I am about Lost, so I can forgive it. And I'm really excited to see where this goes, just as a program. Like, I don't care that it comes from TV Plus, whatever it is that he's working on, I'm going to be interested. So,
yeah, generally speaking, I am too.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that. John, how about you?
Yeah, same here. I'm enjoying right now a series that he's responsible for called Outlander.
Oh, yeah.
It's Outlander. Very good.
It's good stuff. Yeah. All right, well, if we decide to spin up an Apple TV Plus podcast, I will definitely make sure and let everybody know about it here. And until then, that's going to do it for us today. Brian, thank you so much for coming by and talk to me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Good times.
And John, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. And I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.